From pit lane to podium, the Las Vegas Grand Prix is providing fans a race day experience at the speed they deserve. With the help of T-Mobile for Business, our 5G advanced network solutions are powering race day operations with event-wide connectivity. From streamlined gate entry to an immersive app, giving fans blazing fast access to the sport they love. This is accelerating innovation. This is the Las Vegas Grand Prix with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
Hello, everybody. This is Jake Senziano, host of Jake and Gino Podcast, here, my co-host, the multi-family mentor, the coach, chef, the father, six, the best-selling author, the G-Daddy, Gino Barber. Gino, how's it going?
Jake, I'm doing good, brother. I'm looking forward to this interview, Jake. We've got a residential broker on. We're not going to beat him up too much today. We're going to have a little bit of fun talking about flipping, maybe owning some multifamily, maybe investing in multifamily. How you
like
doing?
I feel like you're dictating to me right now and telling me to... Careful what I say. Kidding. Anyway.
It's like, Jake, don't be mean to him. Don't be mean to him, Jake.
Here we go. Today's guest is a full-time real estate investor and owner of Cal American Homes. He specializes in flips and has completed over 400 in the last 10 years. And even had a show on HGTV, Vintage Flip. So without further ado, Jesse Rodriguez, welcome to the show.
Thanks, guys. So happy to be here, man. You know, I've got the boxing gloves on. I'm ready to go. I'll battle the commercial guy against the residential guy any day of
it's,
the week.
Dude, it's a 2-on-1 and Gino weighs 300 pounds. So you're ready for this.
I'm nimble, bro. Like, I'll move around.
Jake is already lying. I only weigh 250, Jake, okay? Not 300.
Dude,
so
that's linebacker status. Good for you, bro.
Dude, I'm so happy to be here, guys. Thanks for having me. I really enjoy your guys' social media content. I love multifamily. I'm not big in the multifamily game. I'm big in residential. I love residential. I've been working with Blackstone or Invitation Homes for 10 years on their single family REIT. So I feel like I'm commercial, right? I'm working in that asset class, but in the resi world.
How did you get into real estate? I mean, you 400 flips in the last 10 years. Bring me back to the first taste of real estate for you.
So I started as a mortgage guy in the early 2000s, rode that until the market crashed in 07, and then flipped over to selling houses, right? Market was done on loans. I got tired of being beat up behind a desk and thought it'd be easier as an agent, which, you know, we all know is not easier. But there was in 2007, the only thing selling was foreclosures or short sales. So I just said, you know what, I'm going to go be a foreclosure agent. And I started going to conferences, you know, to default conferences, landed GMAC and then Wells Fargo, then Bank of America, then Fannie Mae. And that's the quick version, right? There was a lot of pain in there. But by 2009, I had 200 listings and I became a top broker in the foreclosure world. And that's when I realized, like, I only wanted to work with investors. So sold a couple thousand houses from 2008 to 2012. 2012, I was introduced to a group called Treehouse, which eventually became Invitation Homes, that was funded by Blackstone. And they were new to the market. They were buying in Arizona. They were buying in Southern California. And, you know, a title rep, believe it or not, a title rep said, hey, we got this group. They want to buy a couple houses. Do you want to help them? And I'm a realtor that just never really says no to any opportunity. So I was like, sure, I'll meet with anybody. I met with them. They're like, we want to buy 100 this year. I was like, oh, okay. Well, so I started doing acquisitions for them in 2012 and I built a team around it. So I took all my assistants. I had about 6 or 7 assistants in the dispo days of REO. And I came back to the office. I said, hey guys, now that we don't have as much REO, we're an acquisitions team. And I just flipped all my assistants and said, let me teach you how to buy houses. We're going to search the MLS. We're going to pound the pavement. I've got an unlimited real cash buyer. And we just started going, man. And then before you knew it, a couple months later, I was 20 escrows a month with them. And that rode all the way to 2015. So it was a good 3-year solid run of acquisitions. As I was acquiring for them, I was already flipping. So in 2010, I did my
first flip. Why did it slow down in 15?
Because just the, so for them, the rate of return that they wanted, the cash on cash, prices started pushing up. They didn't think it makes as much sense. They continued to buy though forever. Let me just say at the velocity they were buying, right? So I had a team. I wanted to do 200.
So 2012 to 2015, blank check, go. Just get it. Everything's on sale.
Blank check, and it's like they would suck everything up, right? The analyst basically said everything is 50 cents on the dollar in California, right? We look at the historic appreciation. They said even if this goes back up to 25%, This is a no-brainer on the equity side. The cash flow was insane. I mean, I was buying at like a 10 cap for them.
Are these hold investments for rentals, or would they eventually sell out once they hit an IRR?
So I believe when they first kind of came to market with it, it was going to be a 7 to 10 year hold. And I'm not positive on this, right? They ended up, so they were privately capitalized in the beginning. I believe it was a 7 to 10 year exit. They ended up going public. So they trade under the INVH ticker. So it's a REIT, right? They pay a dividend. And from what I know now, there's no exit. Like, the machine is so big. They're at 88,000 single family in America. So I believe they're the largest still. And their returns are so good that they don't actually want to fully exit any part of their portfolio other than we do dispos. So if you kind of keep going forward, in 15, we stopped buying, or slowing down, I should say, right? Like, there'd still be the sure. one-offs. But then I started getting dispo listings from them for a couple years. And it would be like they would just kind of scrape the bottom. Like, it was like, oh, that ended up being a bad buy. Or they would buy a pool, right? They'd come to guys like you, maybe have a couple hundred houses and dump a pool on them. And they'd want, you know, 180 of the 200, but they had to buy them all. So then they'd give me 20 listings and say, we don't like these. These are 2-1s. We want 3-2s. They don't fit in our box. And then so then I started doing a couple hundred sales for them per year, you know? And then, so they're a great client because they're always like following the market. So then a couple years ago in 2019, all of a sudden it was like, hey, buy again. Then we went to Vegas and I bought 150 homes for them. So it's a client. So I don't think they're exiting. I don't think that's in their business model anymore. I think it's all about just hitting their returns. Cap rates started really high. They started dropping it as the market, you know, as they needed to over the years. I believe they're still actively buying. I don't do very much acquisitions. I'm doing a lot of dispos for them in a couple states. But it's like, not, you know, selling 200 homes for them when you own 88,000, it's like, I don't even want to say dispo, right? Like, almost sound like that's not really dispoing.
No, it's tidying up the house. You're cleaning it up, spring cleaning. Yeah.
Yeah. If I sold 200 houses that I owned, it'd be dispoing. It'd be like, he's exiting the market for them. It's, you know, it's a fire hose for me. It's a water hose.
This is
for them.
Shooting your dogs. Right?
Yeah. But so, I mean, I just fell in the niche of working with investors, you know, banks, hedge funds, and then guys like you. Right. As my business started to progress and I started realizing, like, I just have this, I don't want to work with, you know, standard sellers, and I haven't, you know, I love
it's a lot of work.
Hey man, working with you guys is probably a lot of work too, though.
Well, working with me is a lot of work. Gino's a nice guy. You know, I'm a pain in the ass.
I'm the 250 pound nice guy, Jesse. You know what I'm saying?
Oh man. So it's easy though. I peg you two in a second. Jake's who I'm going to just cuddle on, dude. I'm just like, come on, bro. Let's be buddies. You know, he's going to be the one that always says no. Gino's always going to say yes. Like, it's like,
no, Gino will be like, I don't know. Let me talk to Jake about it. He'll just ghost you.
And I already have Jake. I already have you in my ear, though, Jake. I'm like, it's a great deal, bro. Trust me. Let's go. We're going to make some money. You're not seeing it right. You're missing this opportunity. Let's add an ADU to it. Let's get that cap rate up.
So, Jesse, let me ask you, you've got a hat that says flip. Why are you so addicted to the flip and not getting into multifamily? Because you have the right mindset. You're working with investors already. You know what they're looking for. You know cap rates, cash on cash. You probably know lingo more than most multifamily brokers out there. What's holding you back from taking that step into multifamily?
So, I mean, it's a good question, right? So I started flipping early on in 2010 and 11 because it just needed capital. You know, mm-hmm. when the prices were so low, even if you're selling 100 houses and they were, you know, believe it or not, in Southern California, I don't know if you guys know this, like, homes were 150 grand. So working for hedge funds and for banks,
this
I was
making.
This is
in the 70s.
This is in 2010 and 9, Jake.
That's why you had a blank check.
I'm going to send you an email of over 100 homes I sold in 2009 and 10 for under $100,000 in Southern California. Like, the analysts at the hedge funds knew what we didn't know, right? And I was just trying to survive. So those $2,500 checks I was making, even though I was selling hundreds of houses, right, was enough to do better than most. But all of a sudden you come across a flip, Gino, and you're like, I can make 40 grand. Like, oh damn. Like, so you get a couple of those pops and you get addicted to the big chunks. So all of a sudden, if I could flip 5 in a year and sell a couple hundred, you know, it ended up, you know, making 400,000 or 500,000 a year. Well, now you fast forward to now and the systems are built. And that's it's more like the system is just there. You can send me a deal. I got a guy going today, one of my employees, he's running down to Temecula. He's going to look at a property. If he gives me the green light, I say, let's go. I wire an EMD. Contractor goes, I'll never see the house, right? In theory, that's because I'm trying to build a system. I'm not trying to teach people how to be and go swing the hammer themselves like HGTV represented when I was on the show, right? I don't know how to lay tile. You saw more episodes of me fucking laying tile. And I was like, I don't know how to do this, man. Like, but so.
Did they had the tile guy go. Then they're like, all right, put Jesse in and give him the tile and smile.
It was like insert hands, right? Like, it was like, yes. This, like, just, I was essentially a hand model, dude, for tile installations. Like, but you know, so it's like, so here, let me ask you, right? I'm going to present $100,000 flip, or I'm going to present $150 cash flow per month. And that was the part I could never wrap my head around. Now I'll tell you, 10 years later, 400 flips later, like, I didn't need to hold on to 400, but damn, why didn't I hold on to 30? You know, I was counting the other day in my little town that I live in. There's 21 doors that I flipped in my town. And I was just telling my wife, I said, if we would have just held that, considering the appreciation that happened, the rates going down the last couple years, I said, dude, our cash flow would be $50,000 a month or something. Because when I was flipping, you know, 4 years ago, there was no DSCR loans. There was no great rates in the resident, in the resi world. I know you guys have been dealing with that forever in the commercial world. So, you know, in 2010, 11, 12, 13, if I was getting a hard money loan on that, on those units, it was 8%. The rents on a one bedroom were like $800. Who the hell knew the rates were going to go to 4 and rents on a one bedroom were going to go to 1800, right? The delta, I mean, I sure didn't, or I would have kept it. But I remember, I mean, I owned maybe 20 something doors over the last few years, not a ton. And I was cash flowing $100, like 150. And then you get a tenant that's claiming mold. And before you know it, I'm in a lawsuit. And then I'm evicting them. And I was like, or sell that thing and make $100,000. Pay some capital gains and keep rolling the money.
Here's the trick. And so we believe in buying deals for the long term. Okay. Holding, cash flowing. It's a snowball, and it starts off very small, and it takes a long time to grow. But when the thing starts growing and rolling, to your point, like looking back, oh, if I would have done this, I'd had $50,000 a month in cash flow. When the thing starts rolling, it gets very interesting. And then you get addicted, to your point, not to the flip, but to the hold and to the long game and the stodgy business. And it's just, you know, we're just very lucky. I think the thing for Gino and myself is going back, you know, after the Great Recession, we just started buying deals. We could have flipped them multiple times, but we didn't. We held on to them. We utilized cost segregation, real estate professional status, and maybe just dumb luck. I just, you know, I'd never wanted to flip these deals, and we had multiple opportunities to, and you know, very fortunate that we did not, because ultimately we don't have to go out and do a deal. We do 2 to 3 deals a year instead of, you know, 200. So it's a lot less, you know, finding the unicorns.
Jesse, I'd like to share with you the concept, and for any realtor or anyone out there trying or thinking to get into real estate, into multifamily specifically, we call it the conveyor belt. And the conveyor belt model is basically what you're talking about when you're buying a deal. It's an imaginary conveyor belt. Let's say it's a 5-year belt. All you're trying to do is to try to get deals on that conveyor belt and try to get those deals, that equity to matriculate. It may take a couple of years. And after a couple of years, people always say you make money when you buy real estate. No, you don't make money when you buy it. You make money when you exit it. Jake and I have been able to exit on, you know, $27 to $30 million of refinances. We haven't sold our assets. You want to crystallize that equity and put it into the next deal. So if I had seen you buying those single family homes, you bought them at a price point, you wait a couple of years, you're able to refinance that equity out and get into a bigger deal and then get into a bigger deal. It takes a couple of years. And we as humans are linear thinkers. We think that rents are never going to go up. I can guarantee you right now, 5 years from now, rents are going to be another $500 or $600 higher than they are today. We just can't see that. And I think right now the opportunity is going to
stop printing money is what you mean.
Yeah, well, I mean, but think about it. When we bought our first deal, Jesse, back in 2013, one bedrooms were $350 in Knoxville. And that was pretty normal. Now the same unit's going for $1,100. And I say, let's say 7 years from now, it's probably going to be at $1,800. So for people out there not thinking in the future. Right? Yeah.
Like, yeah. And that's pretty normal for like the nation. If you look like, you know, one bedroom in an MSA, you know, 1500, like is not crazy. I want to make one comment too about the residential space. I think anyone that's in the residential space is very smart, and it's interesting because while we may be viewed as like being in commercial, like I don't really think we're in commercial. I mean, we are in the residential space. We're in people's homes, right? We're just doing it on a bigger scale where there's multiple homes in one building. Mm-hmm. I think the risk comes in right now when you're looking at the office space, when you're looking at true retail commercial, because so much of that is absorbed online. I love the residential space for the single fact that people need a place to live. I don't know when that gets disrupted or when people start living in pods or something else other than homes. But I think as an investor, I feel great about the space. So look, million different ways to do it. But I think one thing is constant. People need a place to live. And that's why I feel sound, you know, being involved in housing ultimately at the end of the day.
So. I think so, too. I mean, I think we're in the right realm, right? You guys are doing apartments and stuff. I like SFRs. I think I'm so comfortable in the SFR space. You know, I've had a 9-unit, right? 3-story stack live. It was a headache to me, right? Only because I'm not experienced enough. So I'm in my comfort zone. And it's like, I think back to 10, 15 years ago, I was not in my comfort zone when I started working in the foreclosure world with the banks and things. So it's just having to get used to that. But I'm so bullish on SFR that as I've been developing my business plan, you know, for this coming year, it's like, and in Southern California, you guys have heard accessory dwelling units.
Yes, ADUs. Yeah, it's a big thing right now.
So in a few states, I don't know all of them, but in California, every single family can be converted now. You can add a back house to it, like a legal duplex. You now have a junior ADU that can be added, which is like under 500 feet. So imagine every SFR is a triplex without having to buy in like an R2 zoning. And then it keeps evolving like every 6 months.
So it's a way to skirt the zoning to get higher density.
Exactly. So, and now there's a new one called State Assembly Bill 9, which you can subdivide a single family lot.
Everybody's got a mother and daughter or what do they call it? Like a mother daughter suite or something?
Mother-in-law suite.
Mother-in-law. Yeah. Yeah.
So, but this is the thing, as an investor, you go in, every SFR could be a triplex essentially. So it's an easy way to get higher density. You can now afford to get into places like LA, right, where it's really expensive, where, you know, a 1,000 square foot 2-bed is, you know, $750,000, $800,000. So, and then you could build something at maybe $200 a door. So it ends up being a way that you can start to scale and you can start to get there. It's not as fast as you guys, but it's like, okay, if I can buy 20 SFRs this year, since I already do that as a flipper, right? And that's where instead of like low-hanging fruit, if I'm going to flip 40 houses this year, peel off 20 of them to keep, add 20 ADUs, there you go, there's 40 doors, right? And then just do that again a couple more times and I can get to 100, 150. I think my play going forward in the next 2 years. Why not take advantage of the Southern California market, right? We've got some of the highest rents, the highest appreciation. My cost segregation will be really, you know, really good in the depreciation because they're million-dollar properties. So how does that look if you flip those?
So if you go in and you view it as a flip, but then you add the mother-in-law suite, is that pushing up the flip a lot, or is that a different buyer pool that?
No, it pushes up the flip value a ton. You're forcing the equity on
it. It does. I didn't know if it would be like an investor versus like a, you know, just a someone that wants to occupy the unit. And if it messed with like the value in a negative way, but you're saying it's just all positive.
No, it helps a lot. Like, so in certain places, if you're going into LA where we already have higher density, right? It's city living. And I mean that even outside of downtown, let's say 10, 20 mile, 15 mile radius. Yeah. The extra unit is the difference of the affordability of being able to afford in that community. Mm-hmm. Because,
but aren't they going to hate on you? Because like in LA, I feel like if you have your car parked outside, they're calling you like car poor. So like you gotta be careful of the haters out there, right? No,
You're thinking like Beverly Hills or Bel Air.
Okay, like, so you don't want to do that in Beverly Hills because then you're gonna be like a dirtbag, right? So you can do it outside of the hills. Okay.
No, you're like in the smaller, you know, communities that have been gentrified that are hip, right? Where like everybody's parking on the street already.
You can still park your Range Rover outside and they won't call you a scumbag. I got you. Okay.
So this is probably
a Tesla nowadays. It's probably a Tesla.
So this is California, Jake. This is California's way of saying, instead of let's trying to keep our costs down, so you know, with the property taxes, state income taxes, let's have our homeowners make an additional unit so they can collect additional rent to pay these costs that are going higher.
That's a value add for the tax man. I love it.
That's what I'm saying. Exactly. So the tax man is actually getting more units. He's allowing the investor to do the work for him, and he's getting more tax money. And it's just a win-win for California. California has done some smart things. This is a really smart thing for the state of California.
Blew out the streets of San Francisco too, because the Chinese are coming. So, but that's a whole other story. Homeless are gone. The Chinese are coming.
Jesse,
they need some capital investment. So, whatever it takes, San Francisco is sad now.
That's awesome. Listen, your thing is about realtors investing in real estate. How do you teach them to invest in real estate? And why do you think more realtors aren't investing in real estate?
You know, I think they get, you know, we talked earlier offline and it's like you made a comment about like commission, right? And I call it commission vision. Is all they're seeing is like, hey, I can make $10,000, $20,000, $30,000 on selling you this home. Why would I want to do anything else? For a lot of the realtors, like one, it's money. Two, it's knowledge, right? Fear. Those are the three big things. You see that with your students, I'm sure, as well. But really, if you get even the wealthiest of agents, the ones that are selling 30, 40 houses a year that are making $500,000 a year every year for 10 years, and you know, I befriend them and I'm like, why aren't you buying? And they're just like, I don't know how. And so once you teach them how, they still don't end up doing it. They're just scared. Like they almost, it's not that they don't believe in the product. They just don't believe in themselves, believe it or not, which is really interesting. And that goes from the most, you know, conceited, cocky realtors out there. So what I try to do is help them, you know, so I've owned my company now for 15 years. We have no retirement. You guys have no retirement, I'm sure, unless it's a 401k or you're at your buildings, but we don't have.
No, that's not true. I gotta push back on that. So we actually have something called the golden ticket. And if you've been with our organization for at least 2 years or more and you're approved by your peers, you can invest dollar for dollar, no fees, no ACT fees, no asset management fees, directly into our deals. And that is our alternative to the 401k, because we don't believe in it. We don't invest in 401k. We don't do 529. We invest in ourselves, and our team members have actually been able to follow and do that. And then we're not, you know, the super smart original thinkers. We got this from the book Small Giants. So that's been a way for, you know, our team members to really share in the upside of our organization. So
I think that's awesome. And you're beyond a lot of them. I mean, think about the biggest real estate residential brokerages. They don't offer that, right? Ones that are much larger than you.
I don't know anyone else that offers this, but we believe in it. And it's been great for us. So
I mean, imagine the commercial broker that's been working with you for 20 years, right? That's been a great business partner to you, bringing you some great deals. And they're 65 years old. They're ready to retire. And if they didn't save anything, they have nothing, right? And they sold some great deals to you because they didn't have the vision for those deals. They were scared. Right. And that's the one that maybe that doesn't want to learn from you and stuff like that. So I started seeing that. All these agents have started to come to me over the years. I befriended them. We were small, right? We're small brokers, 20-person brokerage. And every day I'm talking about flipping, investing, right? Hedge funds, cap rates, performas, all that kind of stuff, since I love that stuff. And I get an agent one day that's like, hey, I want to flip like you. He's actually was an intern. I was paying him like 10 bucks an hour. He was going to college. He was doing my BPOs. And he's like, Jesse, I want to flip like you. And I was like, well, do you have any money? He's like, I can ask my mom and dad. He was like 20 years old. I said, get 50 grand. I'll show you how to flip. He got the money. I, you know, had a deal. I said, okay, you take this one down. We'll do it together. He made some money. He did it again. He graduated college and said, I'm going to be a flipper. He's 30 years old now or 32 years old. He's got 140 doors, flipped more houses than me already at this point. Like the student became the, you know, and that's when I realized I need to do this for more. So then all my realtors, I'm like, why don't you own a duplex? Why? It's like, it's just planting the seed, you know, Jake, like, right. Like they just don't believe they can do it. Why are they not doing it? They don't believe in themselves. It's a crazy thing, because when we interact with them, they're like, they're very pompous, right? And they're always posturing. But really, when you break down that, like that shell of insecurity that they have, they just don't think they can do it. They're scared. And so just by giving them confidence and putting them in the right environment, I've succeeded with my agents. So then I decided, well, how do I take this to the masses and start teaching realtors? And I'll be honest, I'm gonna put it right here in the universe. It's a self-fulfilling prophecy for me, because I want to teach you how to bird dog and find deals. Cause if you can't buy the first, sell it to me like that. What's the catch? That's the catch. Like, let me teach you so you can bring me a deal. Cause I'm not charging for this. Like, it's just, I want you to send me deals. I want the best deals. I want to know if you think of something that, damn, this could be a great opportunity, call Jesse. Jesse will buy it from you. He'll let you represent him. He'll relist it. He'll partner. You know, I'll JV if it's a great deal. And it's a way that I don't have to do off market hunting anymore. Because I feel that realtors have the best deals. I don't know about you guys, if you guys are going direct mail all the time or direct to seller, but all I hear from all the gurus is wholesale this, direct to seller. Man, I get the best deals from agents. Maybe not on the MLS, but through an agent before it goes to the MLS. Because imagine, it's having millions of wholesalers if you think of a realtor like that. They're the front line. They're the one whose cousin inherits a home, right, who now lives out of state, who doesn't want it because they're inheriting a ton of money. And they're like, just blow it out to an investor. I don't want to go clean that house. That was my dad's dream, not my dream. I'm not a landlord. Like, So I feel, and then you sell two or three to me, Gino, and you end up, then do the fourth yourself. Do the second one yourself. Like, none of my realtors sell to me anymore. My 20 in my office all flip themselves, all keep it for themselves now. And I feel like somebody was like, oh, man, you're training your competition. I said, fuck, dude, there's a million realtors or two. I don't even know how many. Like, I'm not training my competition. I trained my friends to actually have some money so that I'm not the one paying the bill every time we go out is what I did.
Jesse, I got some good news for any realtor out there listening. If a pizza guy and a drug rep can get into multifamily, and that's Jake and myself, and we can become successful in multifamily, you are already in the greatest business on the planet. Don't doubt yourself. And the second thing I would say is, you mentioned something very, very important. Get in the right circles. If you're not going to events that have multifamily, if you're not going to meetups that host multifamily, if you're not listening to podcasts about multifamily, you'll always doubt yourself. It's really not that difficult. It's not rocket science. We have a three-step framework. It's buy right, manage right, and finance right. That's really what it comes down to. You already speak the realtor lingo. You already know what cap rates are. You already understand how to negotiate with buyers and sellers. All you need to do is maybe adjust your mindset a little bit to think a little bit more long-term and to really get some confidence. And how you do that is by surrounding yourselves with people in the multifamily space and by looking at people who are in it going, they're not that really big deal. You got a pizza guy and you got a drug rep doing it. If those two morons, or as we like to say, jabronis can do it, anybody can do it out there. That's the reality. There is no posture here. It's just that you have to have the vision and you have to have the goals to want to do that. And I think creating long-term and creating real generational wealth is done by buying a couple of deals and holding them long-term and letting that equity crystallize. So we always say transactions pay the bills, which is great, but equity will always make you rich. And if you can think about that and start with one home and then hold it. Yeah. But what I wanted to ask you is, how do you decide when you're buying that flip, whether it's a flip or you're going to hold it and rent it out? What is your criteria for that?
So everything I buy, it's the 70 rule, right? 70% ARV. Minus rehab. So I'm trying to buy big deals. In Southern California, it's hard to find that good of a deal. Luckily, our profits are so big that you can go a little thinner and still make some good money. The downside of taking a non 70% deal, let's say an 80% of ARV minus rehab, is it doesn't burr, or it doesn't, you know, you can't get a DSR to cash flow. So the last few years, I think you guys have seen a lot of resi guys be able to come into the game and hold on to some stuff because of the DSCR loans that were offered. That DSCR has been around forever for you guys, right? You asked a residential or a normal investor or a mini investor, a junior investor in the last couple of years, they've heard of DSCR. But 5 years ago, they've never heard of debt service coverage ratio. They had no clue. They would just go, does my income qualify me to buy this duplex, right? Yeah. And if it doesn't, it's why they didn't hold on to anything. So we saw a lot of people get to hold on to stuff in the last couple of games, which was really good. But right now for me, when I look at that, you know, it's hard. It's hard to get the debt service coverage ratio to make sense at an 8% rate. But luckily in California, because we can add accessory dwelling units, which is kind of a hack that I feel that works really well. It's like I can go buy a small SFR in parts of California still for $300,000, $400,000. Then I can do a garage conversion for under $100,000. So I could be all in at like $500,000 and now have a duplex, right? So now I'm at $250,000 a door in a neighborhood that if I was to buy a straight duplex, it's probably $325,000 a door, right? So I gained $75,000.
What's it renting for?
So like a 3.2 in a very normal city, like an hour outside of LA, it's $3,000 a month for, you know, a 1,200 square footer.
And if you're in a 250, you're good.
Yes.
You're good. Yes. 100%. Yeah. And that, so the key is being able to find that, like, you know, you can't buy a 1.1 and then make that make sense, or do a two-car garage conversion that's 400 square feet.
The 3.2s is your sweet spot, it sounds like. I've heard you say it a couple times now.
You have to be in the 3.2. You have to do the garage conversion for the ADU, and then the kicker is if you can get a junior accessory dwelling unit, which we're allowed to do, that's all the profit. That's when all of a sudden your cash flow goes $1,000 a month. It's the try. You need the third unit. Then you
so
can
So this is how you
then
take over California.
It.
You just laid out the plan. You just you get an acquisitions guy. You take your acquisitions team currently, and you identify this exact model and say, "Go, boys, let's go get it."
So
give me 300 of these.
I feel like I see the sign, JGJ, Jake, Gino, Jesse? Is that what you're saying?
We'll systematize your management company for you, because I think that's the real pain point. I'm actually like, yes, you know, playing the shrink back here. And what I've heard from you so far is you know how to create systems. You just didn't systematize your management enough, and it was painful. So you're like, I don't want to F with this. I think 100%. If you just systematize your management the way you've done your flip business, you're gold. You do your triplex, you know, thing to 300 units, and you ride off in the sunset like Chris Stapleton on his white horse.
So Jake,
5 years, 5 years. That's the plan then. Then I'm so in Jake Knoxville is really, with you guys.
Jesse, what Jake is really saying, Jake is saying find a property management company that you can possibly partner with and maybe have them do the property management. You're out there doing acquisitions and all. They can keep their costs down and they can own 10 or 15% of the equity on a thing, let's say, and then that would be, you consider your focus is just buying these deals, your buy right criteria, you're putting these deals on the contract, you do all the work on the front end, and then let them manage it. And that for them, that's a great partnership between you buying and having that property management company. We're just writing your business plan today. What a great podcast for you, huh?
This is amazing.
In 10 years, he exits to his relationships at Blackstone.
Yeah, I like that. Jesse, last question before we go to the short answers. Tell me the difference between a successful flipper and one who fails at it.
I think they overspend. And I don't mean on the flip. I mean in their personal life. You can make $100,000 on a flip, do 10 of those a year, and still be broke at the end of the year, right? And I mean, you're going to be broke as a flipper because you're broke as a flipper because of cash flow, right? Like there's too much money always going out. If your personal life is also draining the cash flow until it's recycling itself, you're done. I've seen so many guys that were good and did really well. And I'm like, how are you always underwater? You know, I'm like, you just closed a flip and made $200,000.
Operating capital is going to the Lambo. That's the problem.
Dude, to the Lambo, to the yacht, to, you know, the vacations. You know, it's you have to, like, why my student Matt did so well? Because he was young and he had no bills. That's really, like, he was a hard worker, right? He knew the framework to success and doing deals, but he wasn't spending $30,000 a month for his mortgage and his kid's private school and stuff like that. Like, and I can even say that I fall in that bucket as I've gotten older. You know, my kids are in private school, the house gets bigger. So all of a sudden you're like, well, you got to make more to be at zero.
Gino's feeding them organic food.
You know, right? Non-GMO. and so like that is the difference of the good flipper. You can have the best systems, you can have capital, but if you're blowing through the capital, you're not turning your flips fast enough. So the debt's eating you up. Your carrying costs are going crazy. You're not micromanaging your rehabs. And then you're also living a lavish lifestyle. You're screwed. Bye-bye.
So Jesse, before Jake, we'll go to the short answers real quick. You've described the problem with America and why they can't get into multifamily. It's Parkinson's law. If you understand that, Jake and I were lucky enough that we were in a multifamily. We both had jobs, right? I had the restaurant. He was the pharmaceutical sales rep. And we were out there. And the money that we got from these deals, we didn't use it to fund our lifestyle. We already had a job. We just put it back into the business. And we got good at that. And I would challenge anybody listening to this, read The Psychology of Money. What is your relationship with money? Why are you spending it? Do you need that dopamine hit? And if you do, it's okay. Just have an awareness around it. All Jesse is saying, if you make $100,000 in a flip, put $20,000 in a cap account. I mean, like, leave that money there. Pretend it disappears.
No. That's backwards.
Okay. You put $40,000?
$80,000 goes into reinvestment. $20,000 you can do some frappuccinos. All right. That's how it's supposed to work. I'm serious.
Okay. Whatever that looks like in your life, start small, but at least if you can't do 20, you ain't going to do 80, Jake. All I'm saying is start small and start looking at that account. Make sure that money is gone. You won't be able to touch it.
Make it up where you can live off of 20 and 80 yes. goes back and then totally. You never have to work a day in your
yes.
life.
Yes.
You know, one thing you said there, Gino, that how you said you had the restaurant and Jake, you had the pharmaceuticals, and then you were also doing the multifamily. One of the messages I say, because realtors are so quick to want to leave being a realtor to be an investor. And I'm like, why would you
That's
leave your day
bullshit.
Job? Why would you leave your yes. day job? You traded one job for another job. If not, like flipping is not my full-time job. I flip a lot, but I'm a realtor that sells 200 houses a year. Right. And people are like, why would you do that still? I'm like, because it makes me a lot of money and that pays for my bills, mm-hmm. my lifestyle. And yes. then flipping gets to be profit. And that gets, yes. you know, it gets to go into an account where maybe all I have to do is make the shift this year that says, I don't want to flip 40. I want to flip 10 and I will keep 30 SFRs this year. Right. But that's because of 10 years of flipping and also being a realtor. So like, well, one thing on this podcast to anybody that's listening, don't hate your job so much you want to get out and go straight to investing, because it takes what was the analogy about how slow it takes to roll and for it to grow, right? That it takes a while. So double dip for a while. How long did you guys double dip? Probably for a long time before you went all in the multifamily space.
5 years. 5 years. Yep.
Yeah. And that was smart. How much harder would it have been for you guys to compound and grow these units if you would have went, you know, year one right into full-time multifamily? Like, you would have been
peeling profits off
to survive.
It was five years of just living off our normal wages, though, and just reinvesting profits for 5 years. You know,
yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah.
All right, guys, let's take a quick time out to hear from our sponsor.
Now, we have had a great run in multifamily, going from zero units to over $250 million in assets. That's over 2,000 apartment deals that we've been able to purchase through our framework, Buy Right, Manage Right, and Finance Right.
Now, Jake and I, we created the Jake and Gino community back in 2015. We launched our first book, Wield Our Profits. And since then, our students have closed over 60,000 units. That's over $4 billion in assets they've been able to close over the last 6 years.
And that's why this community has been so successful. We call it results-based education, and we pour back into the community everything that we've learned on our journey from zero to 2,000 units and all our systems and scale that we use on our very own property management and investing companies.
Jake, I love that. It's not just education, it's implementation. So what I want you to do, click on that link down below, apply to work with our team, see how we can help you on your journey multifamily.
All right, we're back. We talked about systems and scale a little bit. Talk about, you know, your business early on and how you're able to scale, create systems. Talk about that process, and then you can tell us how you're going to apply it to your property management company. Carry on. But it might not
okay.
be.
Oh, dude, I'll do it. I'll have a property management company in a year. I put my mind to it. I can do it. So in the beginning, dude, it was luck, Jake. A lot of it was just putting my head down and grinding and then realizing, okay, I messed this up five times. We probably need a system for that, right? You know, why do I keep forgetting to do this one thing? Why, you know, and it just a little by little over time, as I made a little bit more money, I stacked on another employee. So I've always been big in having help. I do not feel that I'm smarter than anyone or I can do more than anyone. I'm not one of those guys that says, you know, it's not going to be done right if I don't do it myself. I think it's the exact opposite. 9 out of 10 times I mess up my team when I step in again to be like, hey, let me help out. They're like, that's not the system anymore, Jesse. We don't do it that way from 10 years ago. And it was just little by little. As we found hurdles, we built an SOP for it that said, okay, how do we get around that now? How do we make it not happen again? How do we be efficient? I would always add a person before I needed a person, right? I didn't want to wait till we were drowning.
That's really smart. Yeah, we made that mistake too many times. I'm embarrassed, honestly. Yeah.
But I mean, so did I. I mean, I think we all do, because in the beginning, you need that little bit extra money. So you're trying to squeeze more out of your people, right? And you're like, you're kind of two employees in one right now.
You just don't understand your budget or your cash flow either. And you're scared of like, okay, what if it doesn't continue to grow? And you just want to be very cautious with the cash, so you get tight-fisted.
Totally. Yeah. Then you have a couple bad months and it does get tight because all of a sudden it didn't, right? And you're like, oh my God, I'm overpaying or not overpaying, I'm paying too much, I should say, because of too many people, because they deserve what they get 100%. They're worth every dollar. And it was just little by little scaling, right? Getting to a level of going, okay, I think we're good now. All right. Hey, now we're add another person, add another system. And a lot of it was just by error. If I made a mistake, I put a plan in place to not make that mistake again. I literally didn't know anything about this business, man. I was just going and learning. And, you know, it's what excites me about multifamily is a little bit of like learning again. You know, I'm going back to college. I'm getting my master's at University of Arizona, a master's in real estate development. And, you know, I've done developments. I've done so much. It's like, why people say, why are you going to go back to school? I'm like, because I need to learn, man. Like, I want to hear from, you know, these guest speakers that come that, you know, these professors are, I mean, they're developing huge shopping centers and they're like unlocking stuff in my brain that I didn't know was there. And I think I always think of my brain as like a video game. Like when you enter any new space, you're at level one, you know, it's Mario Brothers. I'm just trying to get to like past the first stage. And as you go, I'm like level two, level four, level 10. So everything is a video game in my head that I just want to keep unlocking levels. And when I meet someone,
jump the flag, man,
like, give me extra points. How do I get down in that tunnel and jump to another level, right? Finding the shortcut. Well, the warp shortcut zone. Is guys like you. that you guys are the shortcut. You're the warp zone. Listening to your podcast, hearing you talk about hundreds of units makes me go, why, shit, I could buy 10. If Jake and Gino are doing 200, why can't I deserve to buy 10? Like, let me go figure that out.
On level two, if you bust through the brick, okay, you can get up on top of the blue in the dark zone and run all the way through, do a couple jumps, and then there's a warp zone to level six at the end of that shit. Okay.
Yeah, I love it, dude.
Up, down, down, left, right, A, B, start. That's all I got to say.
So I see you understand my analogy then.
Loud and clear. Loud and clear. So the interesting thing right now, real estate's down in many areas, right? And there may be someone on this podcast right now listening. They might have went with Amazon. I know Dodge, whoever their parent company is laying off right now. Facebook. You know, there's some folks hurting out there. A lot of layoffs over the last few years. Twitter, right?
Yeah.
Formerly known as Twitter X, I guess we're calling it now. You're one of these folks, maybe you got a severance. You know, how do you get started if you're out there saying, I think there's opportunities in real estate. I think we're hitting a low here. How do you get started flipping a house? Like, you know, if you have any advice for somebody, what would be the first place for them to start?
You know, I'm a big fan of networking. I have an outgoing personality. I think that's hard for a lot of people. They're very scared, but I think you have to put yourself out there. You got to go to meetups. It's the first place I would go. And you're not raising your hand and saying, I have $100,000 in a severance pay because you'll get attacked
by the
wolves
take it?
In there.
Who wants it?
Who's got a good deal for me, right? Yeah.
That's how you lose it.
That's how your money's gone. You go there, you sit in the back of the room, you take it in a couple times. You go to a multifamily, you go to a resi one, you go to a flipping, you go to a midterm rental, and you start to learn of all the different versions of these asset classes, right? Airbnb, until you find the one that you like, till you find the group that you like, and you network. And then from there, you slowly get into, I have capital. Because if you have capital, you're gonna be able to do a deal, right?
The hardest person. You can make some friends.
Yeah, the hardest person is the one that has, I have no knowledge, I'm scared of doing it, I have no money. Can you give me a deal? That's the one that's like, get the hell out of here, right? No. You know, I mean, go sit in the back of the room, learn a ton, teach me something, then we can partner. But if you've got...
And find a deal or something, right? You got to at least find a deal if you're going
to...
You
got to bring something to the table.
Yeah.
And if you have capital, like just, you know, download a ton of your content, right? And other people's content on YouTube and watch it and learn and then go to a meetup and ask questions. The problem is most, so many people are just scared to want to even put themselves in that environment because they don't want to feel dumb. Being new is the greatest weapon anyone has if you're willing to ask questions, right? Like, I always looked young for a long time. Now I'm old, you know, now I'm 41. So, but, you know, I started at 25 years old. It was great to be in a conference and raise my hand and say, I don't know what cash for keys is. What's a foreclosure? How do I list this home? People love puking all over themselves and telling you how great they are and will tell you every secret to their business if you just ask questions and then remember those answers. And I built my whole like career in starting selling foreclosures by going to big, large conferences. Well, meetups are just those conferences minimized. A meetup is a breakout of a conference, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like, instead of spending thousands of dollars to go to a ton of conferences, which I still do because I'm a huge fan of conferences and I make relationships, you could be going to a meetup. Like if I was starting today, in fact, I may do this. I may challenge myself to the Jake and Gino way. I'm going to learn multifamily. I'm going to go to 20 damn multifamily meetups in the next 60 days. And then I'm going to come back to you guys and go, I learned all this. How do I apply it? Right? Like, and then, hey, Gino, is this good? I found a 200 unit. They're going to sell or carry at 3%. You got to put 5% down. Is that good? You know, like, and you're going to say, yes, Jesse, we love you. Let's do this deal together. You know, like, but like people just have to get the hell out there and do it. And everyone's scared. You guys see it. You guys are dealing with it every single day. They're too scared to ask questions, too scared to show up. I mean, fuck, I'm scared too. Like, but I got to do it. I got three little boys I got to feed.
I just don't like it. I'm going to be honest. I just don't like it. I don't want to get out of my comfort zone and speak to somebody that I don't know, but I'm going to do it. Right?
Yeah.
That's just being honest. Don't feel like it, but I'm going to do it every damn time. Right?
I would love to hear from someone that's like, I've never networked and found deals. Cause I'm going to be like, dude, I want to read your book. Cause sure. Yeah. I'd love, I don't wake up every day with this energy because I want to. I crash at 5 p.m., right? Because it's like you have to
be on. You better
be
some kind of like, computer guy programming shit that makes the machine do it for you then. That's the only other way, right?
You better be building some badass performas, yeah, dude, that are like, ooh, yeah, wow, we're just going to throw money at this guy.
Any education, any books, anything you've watched recently that's added value to your life that you want to share with the folks?
You know, so I listen to Bigger Pockets a lot, which is kind of funny because I think it's very newbie-based. But again, I feel like the newbie – like, man, I hear some great questions from a newbie.
You're just a fan of the game, aren't you?
Dude, I am. Like midterm rentals. I know nothing about midterm rentals. Do you guys know about midterm rentals?
No.
Do not.
Okay, me either. Like, VRBO, Airbnb, sure. I did that 8 years ago before it was –
I don't know anything about those either. So
just to be honest. Those were really fun –
I rent those, excuse me, but I don't know anything about them at times, right?
Dude, they're high volume, good cash flow, high maintenance though, right? Because it's a lot of touch points to clients. You're like a hotel operator essentially. Well, midterm rentals, this new thing, and I call it new, right? I'm probably like an old guy. Some dudes are like, that's been around 10 years. It's this new thing where you're like renting it to nurses and stuff. You furnish it. They rent it for 30 days, 60 days, 90 days. So, you know, I listen to Bigger Pockets because I heard some dude talking about MTRs. And I'm like, what's that? I just want to know. Because if I get into, you know, a triplex and I'm struggling and I'm not hitting my cash flow on it or something and like long-term's not working, maybe I convert one. Can I just get my blended rate up a tiny bit by trying it? Like, so that's something I love. The other thing is I think it's back here. So it's right.
We just call it month to month. And there's a premium for it.
A month of, there it is. Do you furnish it though?
It depends.
So
we have
MTR.
We have
is furnished.
We have some folks like miners, and you know some of the folks that you're talking about that, you know, they really make it worth our time to do it. It's not in our business model, but we have some one offs where we do that actually. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, so it's like I love learning stuff like that. So like, this is not something new, but I know you guys all know this one, Kiyosaki.
The Purple Bible. We've seen it.
I've loved Cashflow Quadrant. I'm a Kiyosaki fan. I think it was.
Oh, I thought it was Rich Dad Poor Dad. Sorry.
Oh no, it was. I'm sorry. Well, the first one was.
Yeah. Okay. So,
and then this one is Cashflow Quadrant. Like I love both. They're both on my shelf. They sit up here with my baseball cards. And
you got a Ken Griffey Jr. 1989 Upper Deck rookie card up there.
Of course, not up there, but I have it in my box.
It's in the safe, bro. It's the only one that holds value. All right.
It's like
it's been worth $100 since 1989, and it's never gone up from there.
Dude, it does not go up at all. Here's a fun box, though. So this is an 03-04 rookie exclusives LeBron James rookie year. So that's like a $6,000 box.
No shit.
Yeah. So talk about being a stupid investor and wasting money. Here I am.
Buy some cardboard.
That's a that's a Kobe box up there next to the Pokemon box.
It looks like Wheaties from here, so I can't tell.
Yeah.
But it's all good.
So yeah, dude, I mean, education's big. I think I know you guys believe in it too. I don't really know too many people that succeed that don't. Actually, that's actually not true. I actually know a good amount of old dogs that have no clue. My mentor, you know, is, I don't know, he's 68, 70 years old. He's the guy that I used to sell flips to that taught me how to flip. When I decided to do it, he's still my mentor to this day. We talk every single day. I do not look at a flip and not ask him to comp it for me. And he does it for nothing, right? He's like a father figure. I don't even think he's ever heard of Robert Kiyosaki or like, he's just, dude, he's a wizard. Like, he's a guy, he'd talk about local knowledge. I'll call him and be like, hey, there's a house on Walnut Street in the city of Diamond Bar that I'm looking at. He's like, is it a flat roof or a gable roof? And I'm like, what the fuck? Like, and then I look and I'm like, oh, it's flat. Yeah, I don't like those. Those sell for about 3.5% less. People don't like the flat roofs. I'd stay away from that one or adjust your comps. And I'm like, dude, you're Yoda. Like, how the hell did you? But then you get him out of his.
He's asking the right questions, though.
Dude, you take him out of his city and he has no clue, right? He's just like, oh, he's like, I don't buy in that area. Like, I love that. Like I'm a collector of like baseball cards, as you can tell, like from what I just showed you. But I'm a collector of like the OG dudes like that, like the you guys, right? Like, I look up to you guys. I'm not scared to say I look up to you because you've done really well. Where some dudes are just haters, right? And they don't want to give it up. I'm like, I want to learn from Jake and Gino. I want to learn from these people because you've done more than me. So how would I not want to learn from you? And it's like, as soon as I meet someone that's not willing to do that, I'm like, get out of my world, man. You're just negative and I don't need you around.
That was Fixer Jay DeSima for us. The first few books that Gino and I read, have you ever heard of this, Investing in Fixer Uppers? He's actually from California, right, Gino Fixer J?
He's from Northern California.
He's 90-something now, right?
Yeah, yeah. He'd buy stuff on seller finance, so that's how he learned seller financing.
He'd drive the neighborhood.
And he would look for ADUs. He'd look for properties that had, like, cottages, and you'd build additional dwelling units. Yeah, it was great. Awesome.
I love that.
Jesse,
man.
Do you know Fixer
J? I don't know who he is, but I'm going to Google him. I'm going to Google him. No, I've never heard of him.
He's got a whole book series. The first one, Investing in Fixer Uppers, dude, it's priceless. He talks about when he was getting started, he had, like, all the accounting broken out on the home kitchen table and how he was making money on these things. follow the path, man. He's mm-hmm. noted. So
I love it. I'm going to look him up.
Gino, you ready to take us home?
Yes, we have a young Jesse Rodriguez getting into the mortgage business in the early 2000s. 2007 comes, and I guess the world ended for him as well, like for everyone else. And like, I can't do this mortgage crap anymore. I'm going to get into the real estate business. I'm going to start flipping homes. Residential, that's a piece of cake, real easy. How hard could that be? Well, I think he found it to be a little bit hard in the beginning, but then he got hooked up with Blackstone, got hooked up with a couple of other institutions. And I think the incredible thing is flipping those 400 homes and doing all that work and actually systematizing his business and growing it to over 20 agents, teaching his agents how to become successful investors. That's the key component. We need realtors to understand how to become successful investors because they can actually start listing properties and have great conversations with other investors. And I think that's the cool part of the story. But I think the even cooler part of the story is have Jesse back on in 6 months and see how his property management company is doing. I think we should have that as well. So
I would love that, man. I think Gino, Jake, I got to tell you, this
50
call
of those triplexes by then, man.
Dude, this call has motivated me. Like I was already motivated when I wrote my business plan 2 weeks ago, but now it's like I just go like, okay, 10 SFRs to 20 doors is not enough. I need 30, right, to 60 or to 90. In the next 12 months. So yes, you guys motivate me. I'll have to have a PM department.
Well, dude, clarity will set you free. And I think you know exactly what you need to scale if you want to do the buy and hold thing, or at least have a blend of it. And yeah, you know, I think it's great, man.
Could I ask you guys for a piece of advice?
Of course.
Absolutely.
Might not be good.
So in this high rate environment where we hear a lot of negativity about it, you know, is it, in your opinion, is it okay? So like, I wouldn't hold on to stuff before because $100 spreads, right? I'd be like, oh, it's not enough. Now in hindsight, I messed up because rates, you know, rents went up and rates went down. Do you feel it's a great time to buy in the sense that if I can get it to break even or get it to cash flow a little bit at an 8%, I'm going to ride the refi wave back down whenever it comes, a year, 2 years, 5 years, and then I'll be in a great position because I'm not competing with as many buyers at the moment?
Gino, can I answer this?
I guess so. You beat me. Your hand went up first, so I'll let you go first, brother.
So 2021-2022 were our lowest volume acquisition years. Okay. And the reason for that is we buy with our own capital. We don't raise money. And we're willing to start with a local credit union or a community bank and then roll it out to agency, Fannie or Freddie, for the long-term non-recourse debt. If you look at a rolling 12, starting in February, we'll probably have closed 450 to 500 units. Okay. Great. You know, just in this, it's probably twice the, acquisitions to what we were doing the prior 2 years, right? We were doing 100 to 200 units. And the reason for that is close to what you're saying, but it's slightly off. So okay. what we're attempting to do right now is, yes, if we're buying at 7%, something that's like a, you know, we're seeing 6.7 to 7% rates right now on our acquisitions. We're getting 2 years typically of interest only.
Okay.
We're looking, though, to go in, and we know exactly what our buying criteria, like your old man there. We like the pitch roof, right? We don't want a flood zone. We like at least two bedrooms, townhouses. We like washer dryer hookups, the garages, a lot of the stuff, right? Like that's our buying criteria. Okay. What we want to see though is we have 1,800 units currently that we own, and we know where the market rates are. So if we're gonna buy something right now, and we see, okay, say the rents are $900 currently, but we know the market is really $1,200. Well, okay. We can buy that. Maybe we spend $100,000 on that, but we're going to be well beyond the 1% rule once it's stabilized. So what we're looking for is blowing past the 1% rule, with the current debt in place. But then the cherry on top will be in a few years if rates come down. So we're not looking to break even, right? Mm-hmm. We're looking to renovate to a point where it's much better from a cash flow perspective. And then the cherry will be, hey, if rents go down to 4.5, we're going to be not only doing, we're going to be crushing it.
Got it.
So we want to make sure that post-renovation, we're blowing past that 1% rule. And then the super cherry at the end will be the rates if they come down. But we need to make sure, though, we know our comps extremely well. We get to that point. We're blowing past 1%. So we're good. Like, we can hold at that point. We're not breaking even. We're good. Then, you know, you take the cream when the rates go down. So it's very close to what you're saying, but you need to be better on your buy is what I'm hearing.
I think that's always the key, right? It's just like in flipping. When someone says they don't make enough money, it's like, well, you didn't buy it good enough. So it's just getting better and better.
You just got to buy. Yeah, you got to make better buys. And so, again, like, you know, because we're buying larger stuff, 2 to 3 deals a year is all we got to do. Because
are you having to keep your money in the deal always at the end? Like, so when you do the value add and you get the increase, the cap rate, right, get you the more future value, are you able to pull your money out, or are you guys like,
yes,
hey, we're keeping 20% in? Okay. So you're still able to do those kinds of deals.
But keep in mind, though, like we just did a refi, and we refied at 60% LTV, and we pulled all our money out. So, you know, but that's the function of buying a really good deal.
Yeah, you force the equity.
Like, we have low LTV, still got our equity back out of it, onto the next one, very safe and secure.
Jesse, the only thing I would add to that. Yeah, the only thing I would add to what Jake is saying is make sure you buy in a market that you like. Make sure you buy in a market that is stable. Yeah. Make sure you buy in a market, or you buy an asset that you're saying, hey, I can hold this for the next 5, 6, or 7 years, because you can always buy real estate. You can't always sell real estate. So you have to understand that if you want to take that risk off the table, you know, fixed rate financing, but also buying an asset that you know you can hold for the next few years, so that if things do turn downward, at least you'll break even or you'll be somewhat cash flow positive. But when things do turn back up, hey, you're in the green. So make sure you're buying an asset in a market that you like.
I love that, guys. Thank you. So I think that for like the audience is so key right now too, to hear that, because that is the question that a lot of investors are scared, right? It's like, or, you know, do I have enough?
I like going in when everyone's going out, right?
Totally.
Like, I don't want to compete with a bunch of people. That's why we're doubling down right now. And we're like, let's see how long we can ride this one out.
Gut was saying that, right? It was like, I love the negativity of the rates are so high. Cause it's like,
we're not going to hold on to these rates forever. This is speed dating. And I hope, right? Cause, and we have fixed rate financing in place on these rates, but I'm hoping that I'm only like, you know, dating these rates for 2 or 3 years. And then we're going, you know, four. I'm going to pull this up right now. So I have this debt sheet that I look at, and we don't have anything coming due until like 2027. But I put this note on there for myself because hindsight's always 2020. And we bought this deal, we refied it in 2017, and we put 10-year fixed rate debt on it with a community bank. And I'm like, I was saying to Gino the other day, dude, it was a smaller deal, but I'm like, that's the smartest fucking thing that we've ever done, because we're at like 3.8% or something on it, and we're just sitting back now, and the thing is crushing it. And that's why our deals, we had 2023 has been our best year from a cash flow perspective, while you see all these other people imploding, and it's because we put long-term fixed rate debt on our stuff.
I love that you weren't buying at floating rates.
We didn't touch them. And so my note that I made to myself was, anytime we can rate lock for 4.5% or less for 10 years, take it! ! And that's a note to my future self. And that's why it's like fixed rate debt, long-term fixed rate debt, lock for 10 years at 4.5. You continue to do that, you're going to be around for a long time.
Hell yeah, man.
Jesse, before we sign off, where can the listeners get a hold of you?
You know, best place is on Instagram, @JesseRodriguez, @JesseRodriguez. Best place. Send me a DM, ask me questions. You know, if anybody has needs info on flips, but more importantly, let's hit me a message if you have units that you want to sell me, @JesseRodriguez, Southern California buyer.
There we go. Gang,
guys, thank you so much, man. This was, I could do this every week with you guys, man. You guys got me energized and pumped, dude.
Awesome. It's our pleasure. And gang, as always, we believe in buying deals for the long term. Think in decades. I'm Jake. He's a G-Daddy. And that's the Flip Master. We'll see you next time.
From pit lane to podium, the Las Vegas Grand Prix is providing fans a race day experience at the speed they deserve. With the help of T-Mobile for Business, our 5G advanced network solutions are powering race day operations with event-wide connectivity. From streamlined gate entry to an immersive app, giving fans blazing fast access to the sport they love. This is accelerating innovation. This is the Las Vegas Grand Prix with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.